What about the full body scan you had when we visited the Mixmaster? What was the significance of that?
I was looking for evidence of old injuries, I said. Both wounds were inflicted at about the same time. I was rather hoping to find one and rather hoping not to find the other.
Any particular reason why?
Tanner Mirabel had a foot shot off by Ryvich's gunmen. The foot could have been replaced by an organic prosthesis, or a cultured copy cloned from his own cells. But either way, it would need to be surgically attached to the stump. Now, maybe with the best medical skills available on Yellowstone, that kind of work could be done invisibly, but not on Sky's Edge. There'd be plenty of microscopic evidence, signs which should have easily shown up in a Mixmaster scan.
Zebra nodded, accepting that much. Maybe that's true. But if you're not Tanner, as you claim, how do you know it ever happened to him?
Because I seem to have stolen his memories.
Geeta dropped to the floor of the tent at almost the same moment as Kaweya.
Neither of them made much of a sound. Geeta had died, in as far as it mattered, the instant the beam from my weapon reached into her skull and turned her brain tissue into something resembling funereal ash. Barely enough of it to cup in your hands and watch slipping in grey streams between your fingers. Her mouth opened slightly wider, but I doubted that she'd had any time to register my actions before thought itself failed. I hoped, devoutly, that the last thing Geeta thought, literally, was that I was about to do something which would save her. As she fell, the gunman's knife etched deeper into her throat, but by then there was nothing left of her capable of feeling pain. Kaweya, impaled by the beam which should have spared Geeta and killed the guard, exhaled softly, like the last sigh of someone falling gratefully into sleep. He had lost consciousness with the shock of the beam's passage, a small mercy for him. The gunman lifted his face to me. He did not understand, of course. What I had done had made no conceivable sense. I wondered how long it would take before he realized that the shot which had killed Geeta, with such geometric precision, bored straight through the forehead, had in fact been intended for him. How long would it take him before he realized the simple truth, which was that I was not quite the crack shot I had dared to imagine, and that I had killed the one person I was striving to save? There was a moment of strained silence, during which time he might have come halfway to that realization. I did not give him time to finish the journey. And this time, I neither missed nor stopped shooting when the task was obviously done. I emptied an ammo cell into the man, and kept firing until the barrel was a cherry-red glow in the tent's dim light. For a moment I stood with three ostensibly dead bodies at my feet. Then some soldiering instinct snapped into play and I moved again, assimilating what I could. Kaweya was breathing, though profoundly unconscious. I had reduced the Ryvich gunman into an object lesson in cranial anatomy. I felt a spasm of remorse, guilt at having taken his execution well beyond any sensible limit. It was, I suppose, the last twitch of a dying professional soldier. In the exhaustion of that ammo cell, I had crossed some threshold into some less clinical realm where there were even fewer rules, and where the efficiency of a kill counted for infinitely less than the measure of hatred expended. I put down the gun and knelt closer to Geeta. I had no need of the medical kit to tell she was dead, and irretrievably so, but I did it anyway, running the pocket neural imager across her head, watching as the little embedded screen turned red with messages of fatal tissue damage. Deep cerebral injury, extensive cortical trauma. Even if we had a trawl in the tent, it would not have been able to skim her memories and thereby capture a ghost of her personality. I had ensured that she was too severely harmed.